Eddie Reader, who is coming to the wonderful Ungreanon Theatre in Letterkenny as part of an Irish tour. That's on Saturday, February the 25th, and joins me on the programme now. A very good morning to you, Eddie.
Good morning. How
Thank you so much for taking the call.
Oh, no, you're welcome. Thank you very much for publicising the gig. I'm looking forward to coming.
Yeah, and you know, Stranger to Ireland, of course. You do tour here reasonably regularly.
Yeah, we set up a few years back. We started coming quite regularly, and we're sort of spreading our wings a wee bit. We get up to, well, the Anne Granny, we've been up there before, and then now we're kind of moving around, doing places that we haven't done before. I think we're going to Armagh for the first time, and Omagh, and yeah, I mean, it's a great place to play. Everybody's so into music, you know.
And you mentioned Omagh there, just for many of our listeners, that might be a closer venue. That's on Friday, February the 24th at the Struel Arts Centre, another lovely venue. It's 30 years and, you know, a lot of the music and the release of a compilation covering that 30-year period. Does it feel like 30 years, Eddie?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't have known what it was until I got here. And then kind of all those things your granny used to say, like, you know, life is short and enjoy yourself because it goes fast. You know, it's only now that you know that how true that is. Everything does seem like to be in an instant rather than the long time that you think it is way back then, you know.
Yeah, and people will know you as well from your involvement in Fairground Attraction. I think you toured with the Eurythmics as well, and were involved in other projects. But, you know, you are, in most people's eyes, many people's eyes, if not all, you know, a solo singer. Is it difficult to sort of, you know, move into that, having been in bands before, or people may be associating you with that, to sort of say, no, this is me, this is what I do, these are the songs that I make?
Well, as I look back, I just realised that I've never done anything else but sing to people, and it's been a kind of communication tool that I've used just to you know, function in life. It seems to me that through from the 70s all the way through the 80s, when I was kind of doing my apprenticeship, if you like, I just seemed to, that was what I did, and I didn't question it, and nobody else questioned it. You know, there was no one saying you should do this because I was already doing it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when it got to success, people, I think, then they could say, you know, en masse, there was quite a lot of people affirming what I had chosen to do. So for me, it didn't seem unusual or to sing in any situation, whether it be at a party or in a band on tour or, you know, in front of the Queen or at a campfire. It didn't make any difference to me. It always the same kind of thing, you know, singing and enjoying communicating through song, really.
Well, that's it, you know, because you don't as much, I mean, obviously you are performing for your audience, but it's important to you that you're talking to them, engaging with them as well on more than just a level of you and your musicians on the stage and them sitting watching you or standing watching you.
Well, I'm creating a space where I'm talking to myself first, you know, I'm singing to myself, and I'm enjoying making myself feel something, and making myself feel empathy or remember or identify with a sound or a feeling, really, more than anything. It's more about that than anything else. And then beyond that, you know, I like to have a laugh and wake myself out of it. You know, sometimes it can be a wee bit trance-like for me, and then I have to kind of wake up. I was always a bit of a dreamer like that, you know, and I don't mean that in a kind of arty way. I mean that I was totally, I couldn't hear anybody talking to me. As a child, I used to just hear the sound of their voice. I didn't know what they were saying.
But you were raised in a busy household too, weren't you?
Yeah,
so maybe that's how you got your own space.
Yeah, I mean, there was nine of us in a two-bedroom house flat, and I, you know, I think that probably from an early age I learned to enjoy noise and chaos around me at the same time as be isolated in my head, and I think I used music a lot to escape from that a wee bit. You know, I'd go into the bathroom, well, the toilet, it was the size of a cupboard, and I'd take the guitar after school, and I'd just sit in there for 3 or 4 hours while there was mad queues outside shouting at me to get out. I'd be always kind of losing myself in some place with my guitar, just not listening or bothering with anybody else.
Sounds lovely, to be honest with you.
To be, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I was the oldest of seven, and I just felt sometimes when the babies were all running around daft, shouting and bawling, it became kind of that you didn't hear it really eventually. And I think the first song I ever wrote was a song called Silence. Silence is so quiet.
Kind of ironic, maybe.
I remember writing it because when we lived in our house, at one point I remember that in my other sister's room, the two sisters' room, they had a room to themselves. They had Bay City Rollers and something, I can't remember what, Beautiful Sunday coming out of two different radios. And then the boys' room, they had, you know, something else screaming out of there. And then, you know, my dad had Elvis upstairs, usually. And then I had my guitar, so it was quite a noisy environment.
And the only way, then, to get your own space and your own time was to sort of create it, you know, in your own world and block out the other sounds and just have your own time.
A lot of times music brought peace, though, as well. So it's nice, because sometimes when my mum would sing, you know, especially at parties, everything would calm down, and so the tension would go. And also when my mum was singing, then she must be happy. So those moments felt good as a child. I would be maybe second in command, if you know what I mean. So it was kind of good to know that she was happy. And so yeah. She was singing a tune. But at parties, it was always much more pronounced because the command was always order and be quiet, and space for the singer was very important. You couldn't talk when somebody was singing. You couldn't make a noise. You couldn't rustle a cup. You had to, or a glass usually. You couldn't clink. You couldn't, you know, you couldn't open a door. You couldn't squeak a floorboard. You had to listen to the singer. So in parties like that, my granddad was, I always say to people, you know, he was one of those real tough Scotsmen. You know, he loved his wife so much he nearly told her. That kind of guy, you know. But I was frightened of him. But when they were all singing, I wasn't so frightened of the adults. The adults were very charismatic. But when they were all singing, it was much. There was a lot of stress-free moments when they were singing. So that was great.
So when you're up on stage performing, Eddie, does every song have to talk to you in some form or other, or mean something to you for you to get into that sort of space that you talked of?
Well, it seems to be that way. Oh, I mean, I can throw away stuff as well, you know. I like a little blues or a little easy thing to sing. I mean, some of the childhood songs as well, I kind of like the rhythm of them, and some songs without lyrics I quite like. I like hearing, you know, songs from different countries that I don't even understand, but I can feel the beauty in the melody, and I think they all mean something. I'm not quite sure what they mean all the time, but I know what they feel, and the feeling of it. I think basically that's it. You just have to. It's like when you put on something like Aretha Franklin singing "Respect" or Ella Fitzgerald singing "Manhattan," or you just know the feeling. you don't know what it is, but you know there's something amazing happening.
Well, that's the power of music, isn't it, Eddie? And it's an international language, and as you say, you don't necessarily have to understand the spoken word to feel what it means.
No, exactly. I mean, I'm a big fan of the French singer, Edith Piaf, and I hadn't a clue what she was going on about at first, but when I heard her singing, I kind of identified with some kind of similar feeling that she must have been feeling when she was singing it. Although some singers are great actors as well, you know, that some singers can emulate the feeling with, like a good actress can or actor, without necessarily being that heartbroken, you know.
But I think too, though, the audience is clever and they can tell the difference, and you know, you do speak to people, or you come from a concert or performance yourself, and you know when you're heart to hearts how authentic and real it was.
Well, I think like any even great actresses or actors, they can conjure up the heartache so that they're re-feeling it. They might not be, you know, I might be happily married, everything might be loving and stress-free, but I can still remember what it felt like to not feel it like that. And, and I think when a song comes from that point in my life, for example, in this album that I've got of 50 years of 50, it feels like 50, it's 30, but you know what I mean? It's like all of that, there's like two CDs worth, but there's so much more. And when I think back on the kind of stuff that brought up the music in the first place, I kind of get the feeling that I'm still hanging on to a lot of that stuff.
And it's like little markers and experiences in your life sort of laid out in front of you.
Yeah, that was interesting to hear the compilation, because when it was brought forward as an idea, I wasn't sure I would be the person. I didn't think I was the expert that could choose any of the songs, because I wanted, you know, I couldn't possibly choose that over the other.
Well, that's what I was going to say. My next question was, is it would be like trying to pick out your favourite child, I'd imagine, you know.
Because
we can have amazing experiences and incredibly sad experiences, but both can mean the same to us, just different emotions.
Yeah, and the joy as well in it. And I just didn't want to lose any of it. And so I left it up to Tom Rose, who kind of runs the record company that puts it out, and he manages me, Reveal Records. And I said, well, I'd be really interested to hear how you see me, you know, how you hear me. Because when I'm on stage, I'm the most surprised at what comes out next.
Right.
I don't have a set list, and I'm always surprised. I always love knowing what's coming next.
Does that rely greatly on your relationship with the regular musicians that you have that tour with you, Eddie?
Yeah, I mean, I like to be comfortable, and I like to be in a family. And when, you know, when a stranger comes in, that takes a while to get to know someone. And I'm a creature of family. I like family, and I like knowing that people can be in a room and not have to talk to one another, and it's just easy, and there isn't anybody stressing. I like that about people like Boohoo or Dean and Alan Kelly and Kevin Maguire, and I'm bringing John, my husband, with me too. So we'll just make music.
You talked about handing the album out over to somebody else to sort of pick it, and you know, track order, there's not as much emphasis on it now, perhaps with people streaming stuff here and there. But were you curious? I would have been curious to see if someone ordered the tracks, how that order perhaps, you know, how that order perhaps or didn't match the experiences in life that sort of, you know, created the songs.
Well, they all come from different albums, so they don't sit together as far as how they would have been when I did all the work compiling the albums that they were on. So, for example, Angels and Electricity, that took me weeks of figuring out how what one sits with what one, and how, you know, because for me, what I might think on a Tuesday is completely different from what I might think on a Wednesday, and or even a Tuesday morning to a Tuesday evening. I'm going to think, oh, I prefer to hear that there. Or so, I mean, when I'm playing live, it's always spontaneous and in the moment, and I trust that moment. But when you have to actually compile an album, you have to, you know that it's going to be forever, and that's it, and you have to make a decision, and you have to choose. So these ones on the 30-year record, I think what's interesting about it is they are like the live set. They're out of context. They're out of their own skin and their own album, and here they are sitting next to something. So something that was written maybe by Burns, you know, 300, 200 years ago, is sitting right next to something that's maybe written by Amy Winehouse, and then right next to something that I wrote when I was brokenhearted before I had my children, and then one that I wrote with Boo, or one that Boo wrote, and then I've thrown in Moon River, which takes me right back to listening to my mum singing.
Beautiful.
You know, so it's interesting how those songs all seem to demand their own space anyway, and it doesn't seem to be anything to do with me. It seems to be just that's the way it is because it's reality, and the reality is that's the way Tom hears. That's what he selected, and that's how he hears what I've done all over these years, and it's quite remarkable to. It's a bit of a gift, actually, to have somebody that cares that much.
Yeah.
That can say, well, this is what I care about you, this is how I care about you, and I care that you did this and this and this and this and this. And so, therefore, it worked. Whatever it is that I did, it worked, because I constantly try to just do something beautiful and have that conversation with myself. And the fact that it actually spread and had a conversation with other people too is kind of, it's just a gift, and
it's magical.
So grateful. Yeah. You know, I've been singing now since I was a little girl, and I've never really, apart from when I was about 17 and everybody was saying, you know, what are you going to do? What's your job going to be? And I was thinking maybe I could, you know, do fashion and fabrics, or I could, you know, paint. Maybe I had no idea. Certainly wasn't academic enough to hold down any kind of logical job. I mean, I was very scatty and dreamy, and I could never remember. You know, I'd put the cat in the fridge and the milk in the oven. You know, I was really, I still do that. I had to train myself, especially when I had the children. I had to try and remember where I put all the bottles. You know, that was at 3 in the morning. That was hell. I had to really train myself. So, I'd lose things all the time. Keys, glasses, car. I wouldn't know where the car was in the car park. So there's just stuff like that I had to really... I mean, being a human being for me was quite strenuous. But singing has always been easy. It's been the kind of...
Yeah. And I'm not in any way sort of playing down how hard one has to work to do what you do, but it doesn't sound like it's a job as such.
Well, it's much easier than dealing with everything else. Yeah, it's easy because, you know, I'm at home and I've got...
With you as well.
Well, I think he escapes the house to come with me. That's what he does, because... At the moment, the ceiling's coming in, and we're having to figure out how to fix the roof, and it's a bit
real
a bit
life stuff.
Actually, coming on tour and getting a nice hotel, and you don't have to wash the towels, and you get your breakfast cooked for you, and all that's wonderful.
And don't talk about the roof when you're on tour. Leave the roof at home.
Yeah.
Listen, it's been an absolute pleasure, Eddie. It's amazing that you're coming to this region as well, so people can enjoy you. Saturday, February 25th, Letterkenny on Green On. February 24th, Omagh. And there's other dates in Sligo, Galway, Dublin, Ballymaloe, Limerick, Tralee, Armagh, as you mentioned yourself, and then Belfast as well, up at the Lyric Theatre. We can't wait to have you over. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. And continued success, continued happiness, and continued touring and enjoying what you do.
Yeah, God spares us all. Okay, thank you very much.